This week on Potlatch, Carol Drake talks about the upcoming World Indian Eskimo Olympics and an interview with a Greenland Eskimo, Jens Liebert. In case this program sounds a little, this portion of the program at least, sounds a little bit more spontaneous than usual, we are in our studios at the time of our production. We were talking to Carol Drake, who's going to be telling us about the World Indian Eskimo Olympics. And Carol, is it going to be held as it usually is on the last weekend in July?
Yes, July 28th, 29th, and 30th at the Paddy Gym.
That's Thursday, Friday, Saturday nights?
Yes.
At 7 o'clock?
The doors will open at 6 p.m., but the games will begin at 7 each night. The tickets are $6 for adults, $4 for children per night, or season tickets for 3 days are $15 for adults and $7 for children. I'd like to begin, as this is the 16th annual World Eskimo Indian Olympics, I'd like to start out with a brief history of World Eskimo Indian Olympics. For centuries, native peoples of the Arctic have gathered intermittently in small villages near the top of the world to compete in colorful games requiring strength, speed, and endurance. The games were very popular, for they provided not only a reason to keep in shape for these social occasions, but friendly competition and laughter on those long summer days and winter nights. It wasn't until 1961, however, that the games became organized on a statewide basis, with the prompting of Ween Airways, which feared the native games might be forgotten with the rapid influx of non-native cultures. That first year of the Eskimo Games in Fairbanks, competing villages were Barrow, Unalakleet, Tanana, Fort Yukon, and Norvik. Enthusiasm ran high, and a large crowd of spectators turned out to cheer them on. The event grew to be a major community celebration, promoted by the Fairbanks Chamber of Commerce. Then in 1970, the Tundra Times, the statewide native press, took over sponsorship, and native attendance and participation broke all previous records. The insignia for the new renamed World Eskimo Indian Olympics is an Arctic polar bear on ice with six interwoven rings on his back, representing the six major Eskimo and Indian tribes in Alaska: Eskimo, Aleut, Tsimshian, Tlingit, Haida, and Athabascans. The rings are linked to demonstrate the newly felt brotherhood brought on by this friendly competition. The chairman of the 1977 World Eskimo Olympics is John Heffel, Sr. Vice Chairman Buzz Fitzpatrick, Program Director Fred Baker, Secretary Carol Drake, Treasurer Daphne Gustafson, and board members are Olive Anderson, Eva Heffel, and Dick Wiggin. Regional representatives are Linda and Reggie Jewell from Kotzebue, James Itta from Barrow, and Fred Titus Fairbanks for the Interior. For the 1977 Games, chairpersons are Eva Heffel, Native Sewing, Olive Anderson, Muck Duck Eating, Seal Skinning, and Fish Cutting, George Bell, Chief Judge of Athletics, Carol Drake, Baby Contest, Emily Wilson, Concessions, Daphne Gustafson, Ticket Sales, and Helen Lee, Queen Contest. Masters of Ceremony this year are Chris Anderson, a former chairperson of the Olympics, and Al Grant from Tanana, who has served as years for one of the hosts of the Games. This year we will have 28 contestants from Canada. Last year we had only one participant from Canada, as their Native games were held during the same days as the Eskimo Olympics last year. Perhaps I could fill you in on what games will take place on what night. On Thursday, the games will open with the Race of the Torch. Peter Solomon has won that race for the past 2 years and is expected, or it's anticipated that he will win it again unless someone has been really practicing. Okay, the lighting of the lamps, the seal oil lamps that Edith Tagosiak and Poldine Carlo will be keeping the lamps lit all three nights, and then the marching of all the contestants. The native sewing contest starts the first night and will run all three nights. When the articles are finished, they will be auctioned off with the money going to the sewers. The 2-foot high kick for men and women will also be on the first night. The grease pole walk for men and women. Then the queen contestants will be introduced. The 1-foot high kick, first round for men and women. The Indian blanket, the Indian dance competition, excuse me. And then the women's Nalakatuk, the blanket toss. We'll finish up the night with the Muktuk eating contest. On Friday, the native sewing contest will continue. The queens will be introduced and interviewed. Also the Eskimo dance competition, the 2-foot high kick finals for men and women, then the men's blanket toss, and to finish off the evening with the seal skinning contest. Also during the evening, the queen will be crowned. On Saturday, it's a heavy night, so become prepared to stay late. I believe last year, on the last night, the games ran until close to 1 o'clock in the morning. Lighting of the lamps, the introduction of the queen and her court, then the native baby contest, and a new contest this year is Miss World Eskimo Indian Olympics 50 Plus contest, and this will be native women over 50 modeling their native garb. I feel this competition has more or less taken the place of the parka contest, but you must be a native woman over 50 in order to be eligible to enter this. Also, there will be the arm pull, the ear weight contest, which will be starting with 16-pound weights, and then the Indian and Eskimo dancing will be on during, let's see, the Indian and Eskimo dancing winning teams will perform again. And then the knuckle hop, the muskrat skinning, or the fish cutting contest. We are having some problems procuring the muskrat this time of year. So the muskrat contest will go on pending. Depending on whether we get the muskrats. The final event will be the award of the Howard Rock Memorial Trophy to the outstanding athlete of the Olympic Games. And we understand that the Canadian contestants are really, really want to take that home this year.
Thank you, Carol. We'll hear a little more a little later, but now this music message.
Suzanne takes you down to a place by the river. You can hear the boats go by. And you know that she's half crazy, and that's why you want to be there. And she feeds you tea and oranges that come all the way from China. And just when you want to tell her that you have no love to give her, she gets
Of Judy Collins. We talked to, a couple of minutes ago, Carol Drake, who told us about the World Indian Eskimo Olympics. And speaking of world, the Eskimos of the world, with the exception of the Soviet Union, met recently in Barrow, Alaska, for the Inuit Circumpolar Conference. The man behind the scenes running the nuts and bolts of that conference was a Greenland Eskimo named Jens Liebert. I asked him about the conference and it fact that it was closed to other races. I ask if this was an expression of hostility toward other races.
Exactly the opposite. It is to express that that we will never be hostile to anybody, that we are the people of the North who wish to get together after many, many years of being kept away from each other because of the international borders, which have never, ever existed for us. And by getting together, express in union to the world that we're not hostile, that we are the people, the only people of the world who have been able to survive without any wars, without any hostility, to any one single body in this world. This is what the world has to understand, that we are not hostiles. We are the people of the North. You probably heard about this polite, smiling Eskimo. That's right, we've been polite, and we are polite. This is the way it is. This is the way we have treated ourselves, being polite and nice to ourselves. Trying to survive is hard enough. So we are polite, nice people. We took the white man, smiling and polite, and shared with him everything what we had. Except that the white man misunderstood many times, because the white man is not kind. He's a hostile individual who is determined that everything has to go in his way, never considers what he goes by, hardly considers his history. And by getting together, we are expressing to the world that the time has come that we have to teach the world that we all have to share with our lives, with our experience, with our countries. We can share, we can be united. Diversity and unity can go together. We have been able to do that for thousands of years, the Inuit. The whites have never been able to do that. I'm not saying we are the perfect people. What I'm saying that we are working towards Northern Hemisphere, Arctic Hemisphere unity, to show the people of the world that it is possible. And it is.
Jens Liebert commented on the missionaries who came to the north to convert the Eskimo peoples.
The white man didn't ask. If he just had asked from the beginning what kind of belief we had, instead of just saying he's not believing in Christianity as we understand Christianity, so he had to be converted and then work on him. If they just had asked the reason why we believing in what we believe at that time, he would have to understand that the Inuit of the world were more spiritually awakened than the white man in hundreds of years have been ever. Today, across the Arctic, enormous area, one of the largest areas of the world, the people are divided in the name of God. For an Inuk, there is one God. For the white, there is one God. For the whole world, there is one God. And you do not divide anybody in the name of God. To get away from the religion, let's go into the spirituality. There's a big difference from religion to the spirituality. The Inuit of the world are very close, or maybe sometimes in many areas spiritually awakened than many thinks they are. But we also must understand that spirituality, all through the history, have always been up to the individuals. And why the societies have been surviving is because the individual has always had the responsibility for his own spirituality. And if he's not, then the society around him will not be working together. It's just like for you to cut your little finger, then your hand will not be effective because part of your hand is sick. That's with the Inuit in a society. When one man is stealing around, then the society is not working. Because some of the society members is not taking up the responsibility, the burden of the keeping the unity within the society.
Greenland, as well as Northern Canada and Alaska, provide welfare services and other services to native peoples. Jens Liberth comments on these government programs designed to serve native peoples.
Societies will not work unless the individuals within society are part of it. Which means, if I'm not responsible enough, then the society who lives around me will not be working perfectly. Maybe I should try to explain how I understand the society, well-working society, united society. First of all, a seal have never come to a beach and tell an Inuk, I'm here, kill me and take me and eat me. The Inuk have always had to work toward the seal to get him so he can feed himself and his society. When the hunter becomes lazy, then his family suffers because the family becomes hungry. There are no supplies to them. Then the society starts to suffer because the society had to start to help this family. But why should they help? Because I'm just so lazy that I don't want to go on hunting. I don't have a right to receive anything. My family have, but I don't. I will automatically be excluded from my society because I became lazy. I don't want to be a part of the society. Because the society cannot afford to feed me and my family when I'm capable of working. That's how the societies had worked in my parents' time. Today is different. Today in Alaska you have Bureau of Indian Affairs. Today we have in Canada Indian Northern Affairs. Today we have in Greenland the Socialkontoret, who all says, poor Jens, he's not working. Let's give him money. Let's do something for him. Let's pay his rent. Let's give him a house. It's just like me taking you and writing your letters, giving you a bath, feeding you up, making sure that you go to bed at 9 in the evening, making sure that your welfare check is signed and cashed, making sure that your drinks is served. How would you feel?
Jens Liberth and I discussed the effect on the newly found wealth on Eskimo peoples.
Too much materialism without understanding what the materialism is not good for anybody, not even the Eskimos.
But you would prefer to have your color television set with your kayak?
Yes, if I can understand them both, yes, I will, certainly.
What does it take to understand them both?
To be able to use them, to be able to get something out of them. I'm not going to use the kayak on the beach. I'm going to use it on the sea.
What are you going to use the color television set for?
To get educated, to get more to know. Not to laugh, but to see some more so I can learn more. You see, the modern technology today, TV is one of the greatest things ever happened to this earth. The society is misusing it, just like any other human beings, as the history have shown us. You remember with the bombs, the admonition when he came around to the world. The intention, the good intention, was never implemented. The TV, when it was came along, intentions of it to educate the people, we have used it in the reverse. We destroy the people with TV. We destroy the people with the ammunition.
I asked if Liebert considered the automobile a great invention, too.
I'm not that far. I don't know anything about the automobile. I never had one, so... I like to try one once in a while. I can see myself driving on an American highway, but I never tried it. I won't try it unless I understand it. Understand how to use it, its reason. I use the airplanes a lot. I just came from Greenland, just came from Canada. I use it. I cannot drive it myself, fly it myself, but I know how to use it. And also I trust the people who are using it while I'm there, and also while others are there. It's essential today. The technology have come so far that we need the plane, we need the telephone, we need the radio, but we have to understand them before we can use them.
Where the road runs down by the butternut grove to old Delphiner stream, you tell at the noonday bell it's time for a summertime dream. In a lunch pail town in a one-horse way, you can live like king and queen. Let's steal away in the noonday sun, it's time for a summertime dream. Birds in all creation will be twittering in the trees, and down below the pond I know you can swim in it if you please. If you come around when the mill shuts down, you can see what chivalry means. Steal away in the noonday sun, it's time for a summertime dream. On a trip on down to Wonderland, in love among the flowers, with tiny floss but no straw balls, tallying up the hours. The road runs down by the butternut grove to old Bill Skinner's stream. You tell at the noonday bell it's time for a summertime dream.
Summertime Dream of Gordon Lightfoot. That concludes Potlatch for this week. A reminder to our listeners, if you'd like to hear something or have some comment on our program, please write to us at KUAC in Fairbanks, or if you're in the Fairbanks area listening to our program, give us a call at 479-7491. Any kind of likes or dislikes, we'd like to hear them. This is Jeff Kennedy. Thanks for listening. Potlatch came to you in part because of funds from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting. Potlatch was produced in the studio of KUAC in Fairbanks.